move to item 12.2, and I'm going to propose a little amendment to our agenda from a time frame perspective, and I would then propose to move to item 16 and go into committee, and then come back to item 13 and work through the formalities at the end of committee. I see some nod comfort with that. And so, all right, welcome Tom and Andrew, and item 12.2, priority catchments. Mr. Newman, do you want to introduce
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Look, Bear Sarah, there was a request to produce a framework for assessing risk in this plan change process for those catchments. So that's what this document does. I'll be upfront. It's a work in progress, so it's not a complete risk register, risk mitigation management process yet. So I just want to be clear about that. But I think the bones of it are there. So look, just to give you a bit of a flavour, without going through the whole paper ad nauseam, we've classified risks as internal project risks, so that's the ORC team being able to deliver, on the one hand, and then secondly, what I've referred to as external party risk. So that's how the various parties view success or otherwise in this journey towards a regulatory framework for those catchments. So it's got those two categories to it, that I've used as a framework. I'm going to refer to a couple of internal risks in a minute. I'll come back to those. But suffice to say that, albeit taking into account Councillor Lawton's comments about a community of Round Wanaka that's taking an active interest in Cardrona, we need to cover off that in our process, and things have changed since it was notified. But I would still, broadly speaking, say that the risk of being able to get a reasonably sensible plan change into place for those catchments is low, provided we do our legwork consistently, clearly, and get on with it. And I'm confident on what I'm seeing in terms of the underlying technical base, the core technical information is in reasonably solid shape. So it's not as though we've got a big process to complete a whole lot of technical work that underpins the plan change. So, coming to Manuhirakea, clearly that's higher. We all know that. I'm stating the obvious, really. But I'd just qualify by saying this. In terms of a couple of comments I make. In terms of internal risk, the one piece of the underpinning technical framework for Manuhirakea that I was primarily concerned about is got raised in an earlier conversation, this thing called CHEDS. So to avoid using the somewhat convoluted labels, that is a hydrological model for the catchment, and it both captures information that's about the total, what I refer to as total hydrological balance, that's rainfall, water in and out, and then inside that framework, it then attempts to get down to producing data on water takes and where water goes that's transferred around the catchment, and that's the piece that's really, really complicated. And it's fair to say that model has been in a gestation period, Tom, now for what, over a year? Would it be?
Yeah, probably we started off in May last year.
Yeah, so coming up for a year, actually it's not too bad if you think about it like that, but the real key, that's a key part of the architecture for any plan change, because that is the tool that you're essentially going to use to model various different flow scenarios within the catchment and identify the extreme events around low flow water, and you'll be able to take it back to a actual seasonal historical record, provided it works correctly. And also, so it's actually really quite fundamental. The other thing it should be able to do is give you a sense of all the high flow water in the catchment. That's fundamental too, in my view, because sooner or later, if the plan change says, well, we're going to lift some flow, minimum flows, the reality of that is that's less water for irrigation in the low flow period, given the currents, where the irrigators take the water from and how they obtain it. So that model is the core engine for getting the architecture of this whole plan change right, in my view. Okay. Now, the good news, as I said on a discussion, it's been, the model's being built by Niwa, but the data flowing it into it is coming from largely regional council sources, okay? With some, so it's a bit of a joint team. It's fair to say, Tom, that I'm personally more confident that that could be delivered and be a useful management tool and scenario tool within the next 3 months, probably. But we're putting the heat on, both ourselves and Niwa, to produce that, because by the time we get to a community reference group process, we need that thing to be operating and delivering information, right? That's the biggest internal risk to this project for Manu Yerrick here. And I've got to say, I'm feeling a lot more confident as of this week than I was prior to it. Okay, so that's my personal judgment being applied there.
Good.
Turning to external party risk, I think I'm just going to flip you over just quickly to comment, a set of comments I made on page 40 and point 14. Sorry, this paper could be more coherently written. It was partially being done on the plane last week. But in that, I think around the council table, you need to have a view on what success looks like for you as councillors in that journey. And I've just put a note here as a prompt, really, that the measures should be that ORC has met its obligations in respect of the objectives and timelines it set for itself, over which it has direct control, right? The second thing is that participating parties feel that they were listened to, treated with respect, and solutions to problems identified and worked on. So there's a really fundamental value there that says that this journey had enough engagement, enough listening, enough respect, but also enough discussion around solutions as a measure of success, and that there's a relatively narrow list of disagreement points, even if the gap in one or two of those issues remains substantial, right? Now, personally, I think if all I'm trying to suggest is that if we had those as measures of success, then they wouldn't be too far off the mark, and they're having run a decent plan change process, in my experience, actually. Because the reality of the regional council position of these things, you're never everybody's best friend. It's always a measure. You've just got to be realistic about the success. So I think clearly the key risk mitigation frameworks for what I'm referring to as the external party risk is the technical advisory group and the community reference group. I don't want to underestimate how, you know, they're not token consultation measures. They are a fundamental part of the architecture of getting this right. But I'm also acutely conscious that they need a time frame. And that time frame can't be too long, because everybody gets, the longer you go with the stuff, the more people get weary, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So it needs to be efficient. Finally, I'll just simply say we will bring, like I said earlier, in the freshwater management units conversation, that we will bring our project plan back to you, which encapsulates this information. Is probably a bit better. Similarly, it'll clarify terms of reference for those groups, and also it'll clarify who's doing what inside the team, the internal team. Okay, so.
Good. Thank you, but it is good at this stage. Just a little bit of focus around the risks around, particularly when we're running very tight time frames. Councillor Kempton.
Yeah, look, because I was a troublemaker that started talking about this at the committees, I wanted to make the point that I think I was talking about something close to Armageddon. Well, I'm a bit further away from Armageddon today. I think that this is a great start and is exactly what I had in mind. And so I think it's been really well interpreted. Of course, it's only any good if we're monitoring how we're going, if we're able to close out risks, if the mitigations are going to plan, and if we've got our eye out for emergent risks, things that come out of left field, so we can grab hold of them and shake them at the earliest possible time. And I think, so as long as this is is being used effectively as a troubleshooting document, with things being added to it, things being taken out of it, and as you say, of course, it's a pretty bloody useful planning tool as well. Then I think that I've got a much, much more confidence that what is still a pretty high risk undertaking will actually bring it through. So thank you very much for the work you've done on that. The detail isn't as important to me as knowing that you've got it going and that it's happening.
Councillor Laws.
I accept that you did this in a rush, so therefore I urge you to be a little clearer with your rhetoric. I want to take you to clause 11 on page 40.
Yep.
Okay.
Page 40.
If I'm reading that as a manuhirakia irrigator or one of those people in that community, I'm reading a subjective bias already in the rhetoric that's used. On the one hand, you've put something precious at one end of one scale, you've made a subjective judgment about that precious, and then you've put the economic interest of the community at the other, on a sort of a continuum line. See what I mean?
Oh, yeah, that's fair. Yep. Yep.
So, and there's another bullet point underneath that as well. And I just think that it's a very they're a sensitive lot. We've got to be very clear that what we are driven by is not subjective consideration, but objective consideration of the scientific data that's out there, because that's what appeals to them too. What's the science say? Because if we start to impose our values from here, we're going to run into some serious problems, because they are subjective by nature. See what I mean?
Yeah, I certainly respect the fact that there's a delicate balancing act and how we express things, all that sort of stuff. I'm well aware of that.
Yeah.
How would I put it? It's important that there's first and foremost a solid technical base which enables that range of issues to be dealt with on a coherent foundation.
Yeah.
So I agree with that. So I'm fine with that.
Yeah, cool.
I would just simply say, too, is that the reality is in this journey, and there's going to be sensitivities, there'll be a few flare-ups, there'll be all of that stuff to be dealt with. So we're aware of that, but the quicker we can get into a good dialogue, I guess there'll be a bit more trust in the community that might start to diminish the sensitivities to things that we write around council papers.
Can I just give you some feedback now, since
there's
no media here that I'm aware of?
Yeah.
Your presentation into that area is highly regarded.
Mm.
You have pulled back a lot of the ORC's lustre, particularly in that valley.
Mm.
So there's a degree of trust that they're starting to evolve for you personally. I just think you need to know that. So that as you move forward, you know that, they're starting to listen. And it's to you.
Right.
Okay.
I'd like to think it's
Councillor Robertson.
Starting on that point, totally agree on the not using emotive language. That's going to be really important. Councillor Laws talked about point 11. I felt point 10 as well, which clearly separates a continuum of views, when actually quite often we come up with similar values, and that's a good starting point. We don't want to be the people separating people into camps and continuums. So really careful about just being who we are, which is an objective council with a role in leadership and as a regulator, and developing the plan needs to be really fair. We don't want to be people's friends necessarily through this, and we might be developing some faith in certain areas, we're possibly not in others, I don't know that, but we're not people's friends necessarily through this. We're going to show leadership. We're going to, like I say, be a facilitator through this, and we're going to be a regulator, and we're going to be clear. So what does success look like as well? We've met all our obligations. I think clarity as well on that as we go through. What do you expect from the ORC? Well, you can expect us to be really objective. We also have to meet all these requirements under, you know. So we're going to listen, yeah, that's really good, but this is the process that we're going through. And we're going to work really closely together, but actually we have to make our own decisions as well as a council for what's best moving forward and based on the regulations in front of us. So to be clear on that, that we're not going to be holding hands and maintaining everyone happy with us probably. Then there's, what does success look like as well? It's not just a time frame thing, it's actually a quality thing. And we have got some significant risks, as you've been really rightly pointed out. Much happier with the time frame stuff, that's really good. We've got some significant risks with the quality, I think. Still, you've said the CHESS model's going to be hopefully there, which is great for hydrology. But, and I know this paper's looking at risks to being able to notify by the date. Yep. We're all aware that there are some data and quality risks as well, which will lead potentially to some debates at the tail end in environment court, I guess. It's not just the CHESS model, but we've got some medium risks with high impacts, ecological data as well as the water hydrology stuff and the potentially the surety model stuff as well. So that's good. That's there, and it's better to be aware of that, that we're heading into something with all the data that we can possibly collect. But there's restraints like climate. We haven't been able to collect some data that we would have liked to have. And we're doing our absolute best, but it's much better as a council to be open with people and say, well, this is what we've got and we need to progress. But it comes with some potential issues for quality at the end. And therefore resolving issues in contention at the end might be challenging. But it's good, it's better to know that. There's the quality of the outcome. And then this morning we talked about, and I had another look, and I'm probably been wrong in the past when I've been saying the sliding scale of notification of existing plan versus the notified one, because if it's a particular point like fresh water, I think it becomes effective as soon as it's notified, doesn't it? So it's just good for the community to know that, if that's correct. Heard from Minister for the Environment that he felt that might not be the case. So what do we think? Is there a risk of impact of the plan when it's out there being affected by its status of just being notified or being operative or not?
Yeah, that's a technical question, but what I would comment on though is that if you took a, I'll use this, a 10 to 20 year time frame, then and this does go to the heart of a quality issue as well, is that in my experience the community's worse off without a plan framework when the consent's at the table, and that they might think they're better off in the short term, but actually they're going to be worse off in the long run. And the reason I say that is because I don't think we're getting a bit of work done on this. It's another risk issue. But if you sort of look at Manuhira Care, look, I'll be quite upfront about it. There's not enough water to go around in the current framework, depending on what you... If there's any adjustment of the flow regime, right? Now, I'm not making a bad judgment, I'm just simply pointing out a fact. And so depending on what happens there, you inevitably end up in a storage scenario. And when you get to a storage scenario, you have to have enough confidence around the financial investment framework to do it. And that ties directly back to the duration of consents and the consent framework. So long-term solution is a lot better off with a plan than not. And I'm not sure, I think there's a bit of understanding of that issue up there, but that's... for me, that's a key sort of part of
the that's what
it's
I want to avoid. It's better to be open with people about where we are.
All right, Councillor Lawton.
Just wanted to check whether or not the email that we received around the update, dear councillors, this is the progress report, is that going to be made available publicly? And is it an ongoing progress report?
Oh, it can be. I was conscious, Councillor Lawton, that in your resolutions, you did have it in the resolutions that I was going to update you on progress. So I was conscious of that. So sorry, you got an email yesterday. I'll be up front and do a mea culpa. Ideally, you will get much more clear progress reports on a regular basis through the policy committee.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
My point, just my thoughts around that is that there's some good information in there which starts, I guess, it's the...
Very relaxed about, from where I sit, there's no issue with that being, there's no great sensitivity. If councillors want to discuss that elsewhere, that's fine. You know, from where I sit, healthy probably, actually.
Okay.
Yep.
It starts the reference guide for how that group will engage. And the next step then how it will engage with council. So that would be the next bit that we would expect to see. I do have a question. We talked about one of the risks being, I guess, the community exhausted by over-engagement or too much engagement. This is a slight side question, but I think it's pertinent. And are these members going to be paid? Are their costs going to be reimbursed? And you've got a person in there which is a local resident. Can you tell me how you would choose a local resident?
I'm not sure, actually.
Okay.
To be perfectly honest. So you've got several questions here. Can I deal with the payment, please, first? I think we need to pay an independent chair, right? So I think that's because there's a bit of extra work in that type of role, albeit that if this works well, I would do a lot of the... a significant part of their ongoing engagement between meetings, so that the chair came in and chaired. So that's how I'd see that working, but I do think that that's a remunerated role. If there's a fishing game rep there or there's a dock rep there, they're paid people. That's normally part of their job. So I wouldn't see that you need to pay for that. If there's a genuine hardship in relation to you. So what we're trying to do is reflect that. And it goes back to the point here, is this a stakeholder group exclusively, or is it a community group, we're trying to make sure that it covers enough of the spectrum to cover both ends. So it's a bit pragmatic, and if somebody needs to be paid, well, I guess we'll figure that out. But I wouldn't be averse to
it.
It is a community group, and so will there be an independent facilitator as well with that, or will the chair...
No, I think the chair should be able to do that, personally.
So
any good
need
chair.
To have that...
Go. Yeah, they'll need to have done a bit of the sort of stuff here. Cool. Yep.
Okay, and the other point was the timelines around terms of reference. Thank you.
Righto, Councillor Noon.
Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Sorry, Councillor Scott.
In terms of being satisfied with the process, I think for me it's about being open, being transparent, achieving natural justice and a fair process. If we can tick all those boxes, I'll be happy and satisfied that we've done everything, you know, within our powers and within, I suppose, what people would expect a local authority would do during one of these processes. My only question is around this CHESS hydrology model. Clearly it has been developed for this catchment, focus on this particular catchment, so it's site-specific. So what is the likelihood of that being blown out of the water in terms of not being fit for purpose, or is that not a possibility?
There's an alternative model. There is, sorry, no, alternative is the wrong word. There is another model that's been developed. It's developed through the MRL process for Falls Dam, and it was what's called a Goldson model.
Goldson.
The name reflects the party who developed the model.
Right.
So anybody seeking to discredit maybe some of the details sitting inside chairs, they might start from the point of view of the other model was better. But I think that I'd be reasonably confident on what I'm hearing, that there's been a significant evolution in this jargon, in the chairs model from where Goldson was at. Goldson was probably pretty high level, and it still does boil down to the data flowing into those models, how robust that is. I think we're probably further advanced, Tom, would be my pick.
We had a look at the MRL model to see if it was fit for our purpose initially.
It could have been adapted. It is a point in time, but anyway, it is what it is. It from what I'm hearing, is, and I'll give you a specific example. So in the conversation with Niwa yesterday, they were into an extremely detailed conversation about, what happens to the Paul Byrne, Manor Byrne part of the catchment in terms of water flowing through it and reuse water or whatever the label is, Tom? The internal team's view is that the data's there, provided its input to solve that issue. But when you looked at it, if you step back and said, well, is that component of the catchment critical to the overall water balances? Actually, it's not particularly in the main stem, actually. So you make a set of value judgments that are reasonably sensible about what really matters versus what doesn't. I think we'll be testing the CHES model through the technical advisory groups, so they'll tell us if we're going to get a challenge on it. We'll know through that route.
Councillor Scott.
Yeah, no, thank you. One of the key risks from my perspective we haven't talked about is the governance management link risk and how all that basically works. And my question is, do we need a reminder of the basic terms of reference in terms of how it's going to work? So, we've got these different FMUs. For example, the menu here at Kia is potentially going to be a hot potato. We're going to have people in the menu here at Kia ringing out councillors. We're going to have councillors talking to staff. You know, and there's supposed to be a professional RMA process that's going on there. You know, so I actually wonder whether we're doing terms of reference for the technical and the community group, where it's actually quite clear what our expectations as governors are, but also what staff's expectations actually are. So, like, our expectations might be we need to sign, in terms of from here now, it might be that we're going to sign off the plan and we're going to get regular progress reports and we're going to discuss them at council. But, you know, hey, we're not going to basically ring individual staff and council them in a certain way or whatever. I mean, this hasn't been a perfect process up until now. And I just think here we are lining up for the next 6 years, that we just need to have an understanding
of 101.
Of 101. And let's debate what 101 actually is. You know, so I'm not trying to second guess. But also staff, I think one of the key things also from a governance perspective is that we need to have confidence that staff can work professionally and independently and all this type of thing. So, like, personally, I'd be interested to know, you know, what staff QA process, so that we know when, in terms of their processes, when something comes here, that we've got confidence that actually not everybody's got their snout in the trough, that somebody's coming independently, sort of looking at it when it comes to us. You know, it's been through X number of steps. So, Mrs. Gutter?
I think there's probably a couple of conversations to have. There might be a conversation that you need to have that not necessarily involves staff or me, about the way that you want to work in this kind of challenging environment, because it will be challenging. We've already seen how it plays out. From a staff perspective, I think we started to have a bit of a crack at it the other day in committee when we talked. Well, I certainly raised with you, you know, some of the challenge I have is sometimes you know, we do something, we come back, we get told, oh no, you've gone too far, we wanted to, you know, have a say in how you went with that.
Yeah.
Or we don't do something because we think we need permission, and then we come back and we say, well, why haven't you gone ahead and done it?
Yeah.
And so there is a bit of that, and, you know, sometimes I think there is perhaps some blurring of the line between operational and governance and who should be sort of looking after what, and I'm not criticising anyone. I think it's unclear at times for all of us. So I don't have any particular concern with that. I think, you know, what I talk about inside of our organisation at the moment a lot is about being Team ORC, and maybe that's kind of conversation we could have about how that, what that means for us, so governors and staff, as we embark on this process.
So I put that to you, Mr. Chair.
Yep.
Is that a question that needs to be considered? I think a discussion at some point, so there's a bit of clarity,
yep.
Because quite frankly, as I said before, we've got legal issues and we've got timing issues. So we've got to move. We've actually at some point got to pass the reins over.
Yeah.
But also fulfil our responsibility in terms of where we need to.
Yeah, so we're clear around that. So absolutely, and it would be something I think that would need repeated again, you know, November, December after following the election. But essentially that's what Mrs. Gardner was saying. Yes.
And conflicts of interest and all this stuff.
Yep, exactly. All right, keen to move on. Councillor Laws?
Brian, can I just respond to you very quickly? I think the first thing is we've still got a governing principle that, I mean, I don't think I've ever, oh, no, it's not entirely true. I think I've made a complaint to a staff member, but it was over a fire, so it's completely different. The way that you talk to staff is through the chief executive, so that principle still applies, doesn't it? And I don't think any of us have transgressed that on the menu here at Kia. So that's the first
thing.
So we're not going to get into a debate on that now.
Well,
we'll do that at another time, and
have a
101.
The
I think it's a good point you raise.
I think Brian's point needs to be responded to, because I actually don't. We're in a difficult process. We're feeling our way. At the end of the day, this is a political organisation.
Yeah, but the process that we're entering into cannot afford political manipulation. At some point, we've got to hand the reins over to a professional RMA process.
All right. So, yep, that's again, we're getting into the debate that's off the topic. But the point you raised is a good one, Councillor Scott, and we'll arrange that 101 around the process and responsibilities and flow on from there. All right, any further questions to Mr. Newman or Mr. Policemaker with respect to this? Tom, do you want to say something?
Yes, Mr. Chair. If I just may, and if I can take you back to the FMU paper.
Yes.
The question was asked for a map that shows the
yes.
townships
yes.
as well as the water bodies,
yes.
the main water bodies.
Well done.
I gave you an intermediate version, but here's one that shows the rivers as well.
Oh,
might
brilliant.
As well
has the printer got any ink left in it?
Yeah.
Thanks, Tom.
Yep.
We've already voted for it, Tom.
Thank you. All right. Alrighty.
Thank you.
All right, the recommendation is that we receive this report and receive any guidance staff receive guidance on the views of the risks, etc. So we've had that conversation. Somebody prepared to, Councillor Kempton's prepared to move. Seconded, Councillor Robertson. I'll put it all in paper. Please say aye.
Aye.
Yes. Carried. Thank you. All right, I now propose to move to item 16, and I will move that we go into committee for the reasons that are stipulated on page whatever it is on your agenda to deal with two items in committee. Is there a seconder, Councillor Brown? No discussion. I'll put it all in favour. Please say aye.
Aye.
Against? Carried. Thank you. We're in